Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, retired hospice physician, author, and educator, and I'm so glad you're here with me today for episode number 540. I'll be sharing with you a conversation with Shelby Forsythia about her brand new book, which is actually just being released tomorrow, the day after this episode airs. It is titled, Of Course I'm Here Right Now, Three Actually Helpful Things to Say to Someone Who's Grieving. And we have a great conversation about the book and just about grief in general. And I think you'll really enjoy that. So I'd like to encourage you to check into Shelby's website and resources. I think you'll find her book very, very helpful for yourself, but also to give to others. Because we're talking about grief today, I will also mention my latest book, Wild and Holy, A Journey of Grief, Guilt, and Grace Through Italy. It's available. I will leave a link for it in the show notes. And I just wanted to mention it to you once again. It's a story of a trip I took through Italy while I happened to be experiencing a second wave of grief over my father's suicide death. And if you love Italy and you love travel, you'll enjoy the book because you can just envision the places that I went, the things I learned about grief and loss in Italy through Italian culture and history and art. And I think that you'll find it an enjoyable read, but also a thoughtful process for grief. I just had someone today tell me that reading the book transformed her. And she said, I came away from it a different person than I was when I started reading it. And she said, I'm getting ready to read it for a second time. And so that really inspired me. And I thought, well, I'll just share it and mention to listeners out there that the book is available, and there will be a link in the show notes for where you can purchase it if you're interested in reading about my wild and holy journey through Italy. Also, I'll remind you that I have a YouTube channel, also called End of Life University, where you can watch videos of these conversations I have with my guest. If you're a person who prefers video or who likes using YouTube, you'll find pretty much all of the interviews I've done over the last few years are available on YouTube. So check that out. And also, I want to thank all of my supporters who've been making contributions for several years now through my Patreon page, or they've been buying me coffees here and there, or making donations through PayPal. It's really helping me keep this show on the air and also the YouTube channel. And so I just really want to thank you for your contributions. If you're listening and you're interested in making a small donation that could help the cause, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support. And there you'll find three different ways you can make even the smallest contribution, a few dollars, can make a big difference. And thanks in advance if you choose to do that. So we will move on now with my conversation with Shelby Forsythia about her new book. And I will be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so very happy to welcome back my return guest to the podcast, Shelby Forsythia. Shelby is a grief coach, author, and podcast host. In 2020, she founded Life After Loss Academy, an online course and community that has helped dozens of grievers grow and find their way after death, divorce, diagnosis, and other major life transitions. And Shelby will tell us a little bit more about how she ended up starting in that work. But she has been featured in Huffington Post, Bustle, and the Oprah magazine. And she's the author of three books now. Is that three? The first one, which we talked about on the podcast before, Your Grief, Your Way. The second one, Permission to Grieve. And then her brand new book coming out in March, Of Course I'm Here Right Now, Three Actually Helpful Things to Say to Someone Who's Grieving. You can learn more at her website, shelbyforsythia.com. So Shelby, welcome. And it's so nice to talk to you again.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here with you again, too.
Yeah, I'm really excited about your new book and happy that we get to share it with the audience. And also, we got to see each other in person at the Endwell conference. We're coming off of that a few months later.
Yes.
So it's a great time to catch up and learn more about your book. But I was hoping for listeners, you would just tell a little bit more about your personal story and what brought you into this space that you describe being a student of grief. And just tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. And like, what does that mean? My grief story starts for me when I was in college. I affectionately refer to it as the 4 years of hell. But I had, I think, what most people would consider a very privileged and very idyllic sort of childhood with some but minimal losses or losses that were far away from me, and my daily life. But then when I went to college, and college had nothing to do with it, my family as a nuclear unit experienced my dad losing his job of 19 years, which kind of put us in a financial turmoil. I came out of the closet as a queer person to a family in the South that was not too happy to hear it. My dad was diagnosed with two brain aneurysms that threatened to end his life and had to undergo brain surgeries and treatments for that. And then after he got out of brain surgery, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And my senior year in college, during winter break, she received the news that her cancer had returned and she had 6 weeks to 6 months to live, according to hospice, and she died in 7 days.
Oh,
And
my
so there
goodness.
was years and years of kind of instability and foundation shaking and role upheaval in my nuclear family that culminated with my mother's death. And I'm almost 13 years out from this now, and so I speak about it much differently than I did then. But how I often describe it is like in those movies where someone, or like cartoons where someone falls from a very far height and they go through like the awning and then the roof and then the floor and then the floor is pulled out from under them. But it's like I felt like I was falling through multiple layers and like the foundation had been taken out from my life because I wasn't just grieving my mother's death, I was also grieving my sense of home and my sense of family, and she was the family historian, and my sense of God and the universe. And if you're good enough, good things will happen. And if you're bad enough, bad things will happen. And right and wrong, and order in the universe, and the past and things we never got to rectify, but also the future that she would never be a part of. And it was all of it hitting me all at once. And then I had to go and graduate because her last wish for me was that I finish school. So I essentially blacked out for a semester and don't remember much of my life then, and spent about 2 to 3 years trying to pursue the dreams of my life I had had before her death, but I think as so many grieving people resonate with, I was also grieving the person I used to be and the dreams that she had and the life that she wanted to live. And so I wandered around trying on a bunch of different jobs. I relocated to Chicago, and landed a job as a florist. And that's a job I still have to this day. I'm still working in the floral industry, but I also started writing and speaking about grief about 3 years later when my wallet got stolen. Because until that day, and I write about this in my first book, Permission to Grieve, I had not really let myself feel the full impact of my mother's death. I was a person who, because of family expectations, because of my own fears, frankly, that I would go crazy. If I let all of this grief out, I will go crazy and I'll never come back and I'll be committed or arrested. Or I don't fully know what the story I was telling myself was, but like grief is dangerous and if I let it out, it will kill me, was the story I was telling. And someone stole my wallet. It was not a violent altercation, but in that moment where something so precious and crucial to my life was taken, it immediately took me back to when my mom died and something so precious and crucial to my life was taken by death. And it was the first time that I had no more resistance to grief. And for the first time, I let myself scream and cry and wail and mourn, not just for the wallet and everything in it, but for my mom and everything about her that I was grieving as well. And when I stopped crying, which was only about 20 minutes later, I had this like voice in my head that was like, "You just gave yourself permission to grieve." And I was like, "Oh, what is that? What does that mean? Like, what is that phrase? What does it entail to give yourself permission to grieve?" And within weeks of that moment, I had gotten my first Chicago Library card and I was reading every book I could about grief. I was listening to every podcast I could about grief, including eventually this one. and just sort of taking myself to a grief school of my own making. And I started referring to myself as a student of grief. And long story short, someone approached me and said, you know, the ways that you speak about this in your personal life, you should share this with more people. And so I started doing Facebook Lives, which turned into podcasts, which turned into books, which turned into a community. And now, 10 years later, grief work is the work of my life. I don't know that anybody ever really sets out to become a grief professional. Oftentimes, the losses are what brings us to the work. But my mom's death, which I refer to as the first and the worst for me, was really the beginning point of that. I have lost a sense. I've had the breakup of an engagement. My best friend died from COVID very suddenly in 2022. My cat died a few years ago. And I've been through a bunch of other processes that aren't necessarily death related, being diagnosed with a chronic illness, going through the immigration process with a spouse, being estranged from family members, but they all contain some measure, some level of grief. And being grief student and allowing grief to exist in my life, not as a dictator or an oppressor or a ruiner of my life, but as something to learn from, is sort of the posture I take towards it now. And so when grief appears, my first instinct isn't to resist, push away, push down, which is what I did at the beginning. It is now to ask, why the hell are you here? And what do you have to teach me, or what is there to learn from this, whether it's about myself or someone else, or grief and loss in general, or about the larger grieving world? And so for me, that's the story of how I got here, but also to me, what it means to be a student of grief. And I think that's perpetual. I think I will be a student of grief forever.
Your story is so inspiring as you describe. I think we evolve and our grief evolves with us, and it becomes something perhaps different or something we approach differently over time. And one thing you wrote about that was personally very helpful to me, you wrote in a blog about the second wave of grief, and that grief can come back to you at a later time in life. And that very thing happened to me, but it happened 20 years after my father's death. And I didn't even think that I didn't even imagine that that could be possible so many years later. And I had so many people say, why are you feeling this grief so intensely? It's been 20 years. How could you be feeling that? But you wrote about that in such a way that it completely reassured me, like, oh, and now I hear you say it. Oh, I was finally giving myself permission to grieve. It was finally okay to grieve, even though it took 20 years to get there.
Yes, absolutely. I was just talking to someone earlier today whose child died, and 10, 12 years later, he died when he was about 4 or 5. 10, 12 years later, she found herself in the spring just like irrationally angry. And she was like, why am I so mad? And she couldn't figure it out. And she just wanted to lash out at everything and everyone. And she put the pieces together. Her and her husband kind of put some puzzles together in their brain of like, oh, we're seeing graduation pictures from everyone who was his age in his class graduating high school. And he should be here for this. And darn it, it is 10, 12 years later, and he is not there to walk across that stage to receive a diploma, to go on to whatever's next, to celebrate with us. And the recognition, the oh, that landed in her body when she realized that, of like, it's graduation season, the graduation season that he should have been a part of, however many years later. And that was a really big deal for her. It gave her a lot more permission to feel what she was feeling, of like, it makes so much sense that it would occur years and years and years later. I totally resonate with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think people know that. Even grievers may not know that. I was completely taken by surprise when my grief came back so intensely so many years later. But definitely people in our society do not understand this whole experience of grief if they haven't been there themselves. So it seems like it's hard to find support when you're going through something like that, many years later.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Which is why so much of the work that I do is not about orienting grief to time. It is about talking about specific aspects of grief. And so, talking about the second wave of grief, or talking about, I invented a term recently called meta grief, which is grieving about grieving, but grieving about the fact that grief never ends, or grieving on behalf of other people, or on behalf of the world, or feeling as if you're always catching up to grief. Like, that's a specific aspect of grief. You can feel it within 6 months, and you can feel it within 60 years. And so, a lot of what I do is not necessarily this is for your first year of loss, or for the first 5 years, or for the first decade. It's about what flavor of grief are you interested in exploring right now? Because there's so many different things to talk about when it comes to life after loss.
Yeah, I really love that. And the idea of being a student of grief and really accepting for the rest of your life that there will be things that your grief will teach you if you're open to them and you can carry it with you and be willing to learn as you go, because there will be lots of opportunities for that.
Yes, sometimes whether you like it or not.
Exactly. Well, your newest book, Of Course I'm Here Right Now, is really for people who want to support someone else who's grieving, which is so important because most of us don't know that much about grief, and particularly when someone we love or care for is grieving, we really don't know how to show up for them and be there for them. And I think for a lot of people, it keeps them from going in, from getting next to the person who's grieving and being there, because they don't really know what to do.
Yes, absolutely. And something that I wrote about very early in the book is that even grieving people don't always know what to say. And most grieving people are supporting somebody else who's also grieving, whether it's a spouse or a child or a friend or a coworker. And the whole locus of the book, the cornerstone of it, is something that I learned from my grieving clients, something else that grief taught me as a student of grief, and that is that every grieving person tells themselves one or more of three stories. I'm crazy. I'm alone. It's going to be like this forever. And then there are three phrases that, when you use them to respond to those stories, whether your griever says them out loud or not, it changes the energy in the room. It helps them feel validated. It helps them feel like they're not alone. It helps them feel like it won't always be like this forever. And the phrases are, of course, I'm here and right now. And I have seen these phrases and used these phrases over and over again in 10 years of working with grieving people, and on myself, and in my friend group, and with my coworkers. Like in my own personal life, I just keep kind of tucking these phrases into sentences, and I watch how these tiny words change the energy of how people feel about their loss. They don't feel judged. They don't feel dismissed. It's not God has a plan, or everything happens for a reason, or I'm sorry for your loss, which is just the most vague and generic thing that you can say to somebody who's grieving. Like, sure, say it at the beginning, but what else are you going to say after that? And so this entire book, again, it's not based on time. You can use these phrases for no matter how long it's been, but they respond to these three big stories that so many grieving people, whether internally or out loud, are telling themselves about their grief and their loss.
I love how simple it is that
Yes,
it's
that's
three
my favorite
things.
part too. I like things that are easy to
But
remember.
because honestly, we can only remember about three things at any given time that we carry right with us, three things in succession. And so having it be three things, but so teaching people, grievers have these three areas in which they're suffering. And if you remember these three phrases, you will have something to say. You will be able to know, how do I show up and what words could I say in the moment that would make a difference?
Yes, and the biggest reason I wrote this book, there's two big reasons I wrote this book. The first one is to your point of, like, people want to know something to say, because so much grief wisdom online is, here's what not to say. And it's kind of scoldy and judgy, which, like, more power to you, because I think people need to stop saying God needed another angel and why are you still so sad? It's been 6 months, blah, blah, blah. I think people should stop saying those things. So by all means, keep publishing those articles. But I think what's not happening is suggested alternatives of things to say, not just in the immediate aftermath, but in the long term. And so that's the first reason I wrote this book. But then the second reason I wrote it, and it's a little bit quieter, but nobody is really talking about words specifically as a tool for grief support. So many grief books about how to be there for someone who's grieving, talk about casseroles and sending flowers and grocery meal delivery and mowing their lawn and babysitting their kids and watching their dog. And all of those are helpful. But they're also actions, and they require energy, or they cost money, or they require you to be in the same physical or geographic space as the person who's grieving. And something that I get chills talking about this, but something we learned during COVID is that that's not always possible. And in this internet era, so many of our friends and family members aren't the people that live next door. They live across states or across countries or across time zones. And when we can't physically be there, whether we can't afford a flight or we can't take off work or we don't have the money to send a gift card, what we always have at our disposal is words. And so whether we're sending a text or comforting them over FaceTime or supporting them on Zoom or in person, if we're blessed to be able to do that, words are the free, most accessible thing that any of us has at any time to support somebody who's grieving. And over again, grieving people say, yes, actions matter, but to me, words mattered more. And that's kind of a role reversal of what society teaches, which is actions speak louder than words. But there is nothing more painful to somebody who's grieving than receiving a casserole that was prepared with love on their doorstep from someone who says, it's okay, you'll have another child, or you'll date again, or this isn't the end of the world. You should stop feeling like this, because those words just immediately cancel out the kindness of the action. And so for grieving people, words of, I'm here for you. Of course, this hurts your grieving. Right now, it makes sense that you can't see a way out of this. Those are so much more comforting than the actions or the gestures that people send their way.
That's so very true, because being here for someone, you to realize you can be there and be present for someone without being in the same location. And it's much more energetic and spiritual in a way, if you will, but it's your openness, your willingness to hold space with them, to talk to them, to be there, to be thinking about them, to be caring about them, even from a distance. And so to convey that message is so very important.
Yes, and it's something I love. Hang on, there's a person yelling outside my window, and I don't know why. I think someone has a dog that got loose.
I don't hear it. I don't hear anything.
That's good. Okay, great. Okay, I think he walked down to the end of the block. Every now and then, living in a big city. You said, okay.
Oh yeah, the importance of letting people know you can tell someone you're right here for them, even if you don't live in proximity to them, because that do it doesn't require you to be in the same place. You can ex express that from a distance.
Yes, absolutely. And one of my other favorite things about words as a tool is you also don't need to be emotionally close to a griever either to use them. Like this book is designed for friends and family and people who have known a grieving person for years and years, but it's also for coworkers, for grief professionals who may have never met a grieving person before, for medical professionals who are like a massage therapist who's taking care of someone who's grieving, or a yoga instructor, or a pastor who has never had a congregant walk into their office with a loss story and suddenly they're holding all of that in the room. And so, yes, it's for people who know us the most intimately, but what a blessing it would be to receive an email from a manager, perhaps, to say, of course, it makes sense that you would be grieving in this season. Your husband just died. Right now, which projects would you like to take off your plate? We can help. We're here for you. As opposed to, or in addition to, here's a $200 gift card to get yourself groceries for the next month since your husband has died, or whatever other policy you have in place at your workplace. So words I love because they're not just for the intimate relationships, they're also for ones where like a neighbor has lost someone, or a distant family friend you haven't seen but are now going to run into at the reunion of your high school or college or something like that is going through a divorce. And so they can help with these sort of acquaintance or tangential relationships, or even when you run into someone, whether you're serving somebody at work or talking to a customer or client or something like that on a more professional level, where words can still be helpful in the moment.
Yeah. And if we haven't learned these words, helpful words to say in the moment when we're with someone who's grieving and we're stumbling around and trying to grab something, we're likely to resort to an old phrase or an adage we may have heard even in our childhood. We may have heard someone else say that might be what we retrieve and pull forward to say to someone. And even if in the moment we think, I shouldn't have said that, but if we don't have other words that we can rely upon, we are likely to resort to something we heard somewhere else a long time ago.
Yes, or simply just, I'm sorry for your loss. And I don't have a gripe against that phrase. I just think it's It's the first thing you can say, but it's not enough for the long term. I think a lot of, and I just did a podcast about this. I'm getting a lot of blowback about it on social media from people who have never seen me or know my work. But I basically did a podcast episode on I'm sorry for your loss is not enough, and here's what we need to do in addition to that as a phrase, because so many grieving people, my clients included, and myself included, received condolence cards and casseroles and flowers and books to their doorstep in the first 2 weeks after a loss, and then people just disappear. And so you get, I'm sorry for your loss, radio silence in that order and nothing else. And what these words do is give you something else to say to continue the relationship besides, I'm sorry for your loss, over and over again on repeat. Because you may feel that way. You may be in sorrow about their loss and want to express that over and over again. But there are other things you can say that are oftentimes more helpful, or my condolences. Like that's another one where it's like, say it at the beginning and then keep showing up with your words and your language. Because one of the other reasons I wrote this book, it's not just so that people know what to say. It's so that the secondary loss of friendships and relationships doesn't happen. Because the biggest loss that so many grieving people face, besides the death of a person or a divorce or a diagnosis, I call them the three Ds, death, divorce, and diagnosis, the big things that change our life, is that friends and family fall away or relationships fracture in part because of people disappearing because they don't know what to say or saying things that are inadvertently or unintentionally hurtful. And grieving people feel alone and misunderstood and crazy and like their pain is going to last forever. And because their friends and family and coworkers don't know how to reach out to them with language in those seasons, those relationships break. People quit jobs. People become estranged. People stop talking to friends and family members that they were formerly close to. And it's a second loss that they have to grieve on top of their losses. And friends and family and coworkers are desperate to know, what do I say so that this relationship doesn't break? This is the guidebook for that. For anyone who wants to be a better friend to someone who's grieving, and frankly, we will all be the person who's grieving and the person who's providing comfort in some chapter of our lives. Oftentimes, we'll be both at the same time.
And you offer this teaching to people so that the griever doesn't have to be the one to give feedback or try to teach people what to say to me to help me.
That's another pain point a lot of grieving people have because society's not here yet. I know this is one of your pain points too, but like we do not yet live in a grief literate society. There is no larger, I'm thinking federal, but even just like cultural missive of here's how to be here for grieving people, just as a default, other than here's what you do when someone dies and there's a funeral and then you send this or donate to that. And then you're done. You've done your societal obligation to support someone grieving. But grievers know that grief lasts way beyond after the funeral ends. It lasts for the rest of your life. And we grieve so much besides just death. And so this is absolutely a guidebook for grieving people to get for their friends and family who want to be there for them and say, I want to be here for you. I want to support you, but I don't know how. Give them this book. But it's also a book for grieving people. And this is kind of the part that hurts my heart. It's also a book for grieving people whose friends and family members have disappeared in such a way that they are forced to be their own comforters in this season. There are very lonely seasons of loss where either the person who did support you is the person who died, or friends, family members, coworkers have fallen away in such a big way that you are forced to support yourself in this season until other kinds of support are available. And so there's a whole section at the beginning of the book of you can read this book in a way where you are the griever and the comforter at the same time, and speaking from different parts of yourself, the part of you that is suffering and the part of you that is offering support. And then my wish for you is that hopefully your circle of family and friends will either learn from you as you continue to support yourself, or that you will find circles of support that can be helpful to you in grief. So it's written, yes, for anyone who's alongside a grieving person, but also for grievers themselves who are looking to support themselves through grief and in a great season of loneliness.
I love that. I could see how helpful it would be just to use the book and to even use these free three phrases. Of course, I'm here right now in journaling or something as you kind of journal or
Yes,
write a
yes.
note to yourself about, of course, I feel this way. That's totally normal. Of course, everything seems crazy right now. I mean, I can really see the value of it for just our self-compassion and self-care.
Yes, absolutely. And something I include in the book in every chapter is journaling prompts, tiny exercises, little rituals you can do if you want. If you just take away the words, fine. But if you want to do something with them or apply them to your life in a meaningful way, there are opportunities, like you, as you said, to journal with them or write about them or to practice saying them to someone else. One of my favorite ones is to actually spot where you could use these phrases with people, like on TV and in the movies. And so to say, I'm watching Schitt's Creek and they just lost their house. What's the grief story they're telling? Is it I'm crazy, I'm alone, or it's going to be like this forever, or all three? And then how would you respond to each of the individual characters as they are expressing their suffering? And that's just one example you could do. My favorite show is The Golden Girls, so I spot grief stories on The Golden Girls all the time, whether it's a neighbor dying or a divorce, Dorothy's divorce from Stan, or Rose potentially getting diagnosed with HIV/AIDS. And so, like, there are so many different storylines in the things that we are already watching and consuming. You can sort of play grief language I spy with things that already exist and practice that way too. If you don't feel like being super introspective, sometimes that's more painful for grieving people than not, and want to see where else in the world does grief exist so I feel less alone is a really cool way to do that too. But that's an
Wow.
exercise that's in the book.
Wow. I really love that. That's the perfect curriculum for a grief student to
Yes.
combine it with our, our entertainment to find even more depth within the things that we watch and the things we engage with. I was thinking of social media also, because you mentioned that as a milieu where I think we need a lot of grief literacy training, because oftentimes when I see someone who maybe they've post something online, very vulnerable, talk about a loss they've experienced or grief that they're going through. And some of the comments that they receive are just completely oblivious or unaware of what that experience is really like. And I just think, oh my goodness, like we need so much grief literacy training, even in our social media spaces where people often make comments that really are not helpful.
Yes, I have a great example of that. One of my friends, Miranda Malone, is the mother loss therapist, and she posts regularly on Instagram about all the ways she remembers her mom, and her mom died when before she was one in a car accident. And for Valentine's Day, she walked into a florist, and I'm assuming she got permission from the florist to film their interaction, but she pretended to send herself flowers from her dead mom on Valentine's Day and asked the florist, surprise me on the date, surprise me with the types of flowers. I just want this message from my mom to send. And she has been receiving waves of hate and judgment and vitriol from people who are like, you're posting about your mom's death just to get attention. Can't believe you're doing this for clout, taking advantage of a small business, blah, blah, blah. Where a more appropriate comment to someone sharing about their grief story online and a holiday that could be really hard for a lot of people, a day that celebrates love and your mom is dead, would be to say something like, in this season or right now, I can see how you're missing your mom more than ever. Of course, that makes perfect sense. What a beautiful gesture to remember her and to honor your grief. I'm here for you. And so there's a combination of right now, of course, I'm here in a scrambled different way. But using all of those phrases to validate her grief, to accompany her in her loss, I'm here for you. I haven't forgotten that you're grieving. And to contextualize in this season, right now, I can see how this is true for you. And none of that carries judgment or hate or criticism of how she is grieving. You can keep those thoughts to yourself or not have them at all, I
Yes,
would wager to
we
say.
wish.
But yes, social
Yeah.
media is such a place where people express these inside thoughts of, I can't believe you're not over it yet, or I can't believe you can't put your trust in God, or you're just using his death for attention, or whatever the story is that they're telling, when these phrases could be such a different way of supporting people in their grief. And I don't know how much of my social media that you've seen or that listeners of this podcast have seen, but I use these phrases so often to validate people in my comments who are talking about their own losses and their own grief situations or circumstances with family. And I say things, somebody commented recently, something like, my husband has been dead for 5 years and I will never feel joy again. And words like never or always, kind of this extremist language, always ding ding for me of like, oh, they're telling a story of it will be like this forever. And so I said, right now, I can see how you think you will never feel joy again. I hear you. That makes total sense to me, of course. And then here's where you can find grief support resources if you are looking for them. And if not, just know that my work is here for you. And that is such a different way to respond than, I'm sorry for your loss, which is generic and supportive, but like kind of does nothing, or nothing at all. And it's just a different way of interacting that makes people feel seen and heard and loved and understood, especially in a social media environment where so many of us, I feel like, are tossing our grief into the void and wondering if anyone cares, or not expressing our grief at all and only showing the shiny stuff because social media and other people's comments and receiving hate has taught us that no one wants to see that. And so some of my work in the world is making every space feel a little bit more welcoming of having grief in it because it's already present. We're just not talking about it.
Yeah. And I love that you're modeling it. You know, you're modeling it through your own comments and through your own posts on social media so that hopefully, gradually, more and more people will become more literate in grief support. But I wanted to mention a few weeks ago, I interviewed Darnell Lamont Walker.
Yes.
And he told the story of being on a long train ride and the woman sitting across from him. Apparently, I mean, you can't help but overhear sometimes people's conversations. She got some upsetting news on a phone call. He just overheard her talking, saw she was visibly upset and crying, and she went into the restroom. And he wrote on a little piece of paper, "I'm here if you need to talk to anyone." And he folded it and left it, you know, on her seat when she came back. And I thought that was just the sweetest, simplest gesture from a total stranger, but someone who witnessed the suffering of another person and said, "We're on a long train ride. I'm right here. I'm comfortable
Yes.
listening to this and helping someone with their pain right now. If you want someone to share with, please do." And he said it took a while for her, but she gradually started talking to him, and he ended up hearing the whole story of what was happening and being a great support to her. But that really inspired me to just. If we're paying attention, just like you're talking about, you're watching a television program and you're looking for the grief stories, there are grief stories all around us. People all around us are grieving, and there are little moments when we could do the simplest, kindest, small thing just to show this kind of support to someone.
Yes, I love that story. It gives me chills, and it reminds me of after my best friend died from COVID very suddenly, and I write about this in the book. I have a very dear friend named Emily who, about once a month, and not with any like regularity, like not on the month anniversary of her death or anything like that, but kind of just whenever she was thinking about it, she would send a text of just like, "Hey, no need to respond. Just checking in. Haven't forgotten that Tammy's dead. This really sucks. I'm here for you." And then you just leave. Like, just whenever I got to the text, sometimes I responded, sometimes I didn't. And to your point, these teeny tiny gestures that take almost no time at all, but that use language to connect us and help us recognize that, yes, we are suffering. We do not have to be suffering alone, or we are not suffering alone, are so, 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 so significant in this world we are living in right now. I think so many people, even before you factor personal losses into the equation, are grieving a sense of stability and harmony and certainty about the future. I've written about this in a few different places and ways about grieving on behalf of the world, or grieving that it didn't have to be this way, or grieving the division in our society. And so to be a person who reaches out, even just with your words, whether written or over a text or over an email or in person or on Zoom, and just saying, "It makes sense that you feel this way. I have not forgotten about your loss or the fact that you are grieving. And in this season, it makes sense that this is what's going through your head or that this is all you can see." All of those are really, really empathetic ways to acknowledge someone's grief in the room. And sort of the Mr. Rogers look for the helpers situation. It's to be a helper, and it takes literally seconds from your life, as opposed to, and I don't want to demonize like casseroles or flowers or walking someone's dog or mowing the lawn or something like that, but all of those things cost a great deal now in our society, whether that's energy, time, or money. And we don't all have that to give. And you also have to be close by to the person, usually, to make that happen. And what language does is transcends all of that. And takes so little time, so little energy, but the impact of it is huge. And we remember that we are not forgotten, that our emotions are normal, and that it won't always be like this. And that's an incredible gift you can give to anybody in your life, whether you are their closest friend or family member, or literally someone they just met on a train.
That's beautiful. And I love the additional phrase that you mentioned that your friend texted to you is no need to respond, because
Yes.
words allow us to let the other person know, I'm not asking for anything in return from you. I mean, a casserole, there might, well, you might have to return the dish, but
Oh,
there, it feels like it may come with an expectation of a thank you note or acknowledge this later that I sent this to you. But I love the idea of starting with no need to respond, because it shows the other person, I'm not looking for you to give me something. I'm not looking for you to reassure me or you to tell me the story.
Yes.
No need to respond to me. I just wanted to give you this little wish today.
Yes, and I've tried to practice this as best as I can, and it's hard even for me as somebody who I don't know if you resonate with this, but who does grief for a living. I have had several people, I mean, in the last even 5, 6, 7 years. Hold on one second. Excuse me. I have had so many people in the last 5, 6, 7 years lose jobs that they didn't expect to get fired from, have pets die, move geographically to places that they didn't expect to move to reasons they didn't want to move for, have parents in caregiving situations, have siblings die. Like I've had everybody's experiencing loss all the time. And literally, this may just be how my brain works, but I'll be walking to the train, or I'll be getting ready for bed, or I'll be brushing my teeth. And I will think of, oh, I wonder how this person is doing since their dog died. And I try to really make a point to stop, send a text. Send a voice memo, however I normally communicate with them, and say, hey, no need to respond, but I was just thinking of you and your dog. I haven't forgotten that he died this year and that his gotcha day is coming up. Hope you're doing okay. Send. And then just send it into the ether. And sometimes people respond and sometimes they don't. And sometimes it turns into deeper, longer conversations. And sometimes it's just like, hey, thanks. Everybody's pulled away. I've gone back to work. This week was really hard, but this lifted my spirits. Sometimes it's just that. And folding that as a practice into life has been something that even I'm working to do on a regular basis. And it's kind of where I want everybody to get eventually. It's like if they cross their mind, send a text, send an email, send a voice memo, say, no need to respond. You just crossed my mind. I know this season is XYZ, or the holidays are coming up, or Mother's Day's coming up. I haven't forgotten that you're grieving. It makes sense that you would be feeling insert emotions here. Or here's a picture I have of the person who died, or a funny story. If you have those at your disposal, it's okay if you don't, but to just like send. And the gift that that is to somebody who's grieving is to be a person who continues to show up in that way after months have passed, after years have passed, especially for non-death related losses, is something that I cannot overstate. So many of my clients and students grieve again the disappearance of people that they thought would be supporting them forever for the rest of their lives. And if even one person remembers to text on a death anniversary or call on a date that they got diagnosed with something that changed their life, it truly just means the world. And I think that we sometimes underestimate. It's like, well, it's just words. It's not like it's doing anything. And I have the opposite view of like they are words. They're doing everything. In the absence of your literally being there and being able to hug them or reassure them that that they're not alone.
Yeah, so true. Here in Los Angeles, where I live, like it's been just over a year now since the terrible fires that happened here
Yes.
that burned down entire communities, and my son and his family lost a home in that fire. And the enormity of it is almost hard to grasp. But if you think about people, who is their support community, because all of their neighbors and all of their friends also lost their homes. Essentially, you know, everyone that they were close to, that you're in community with, have suffered a loss as well. And there are really times when the rest of us who are in an outer ring of support, I guess, we need to step up and be aware that sometimes there are communal events that need our support and our help, if we're able to show up in some way with words of just saying, I see you. I'm aware of what happened to you. I'm following it. I care about that. I'm witnessing it with you and the pain you're all going through.
Yes, and I think this is a spot, kind of circling back to your point about social media, where social media can be helpful because things like Facebook memories or time hop that show you 1 year ago today or 5 years ago today or 10 years ago today, they remind us of what we have lived through and what we have lost. And so to even say, oh my gosh, 8 years ago today, my best friend and I were training for the marathon, and to text our other friend that we were also in running practice with, of like, got this picture today. I haven't forgotten that it still sucks that she's dead. I'm here for you. This is still hard. Love you so much. And being able to send that out, or for people saying, I just got into a home, a new home after these fires in California. It's been a whole year since this happened. And to respond, hey, haven't forgotten that this is still a true fact about your life, and it's still really hard to live with. I'm here for you. Like, those are all really beautiful words you can say, whether you are near or far, inner ring of support, outer ring of support. And that is a place where social media surprisingly can actually help us be better at grief.
That's really true. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good way to look at it. Well, it feels to me like as we're talking about your book, of course, I'm here right now. This book, we've already discussed the fact that it could be helpful for anyone. If you're a griever yourself, someone helping a grieving person who's in your intimately part of your circle, but also a professional. I mean, I'm thinking even of the Trader Joe's cashiers when you're
Yes.
checking out in the grocery line. Sometimes people are saying, I'm grieving right now. I mean, if you're out in the world and you work with people, you will be with people who are grieving. And so to have an idea of what could be helpful that I could say, that's very simple and easy to say.
One of my favorite panels that I was ever on was during COVID, but it was, I think it was something like a hairdresser, a funeral director, and a florist walk into a room. And it was about how helping professionals and service professionals and hospitality professionals are often on the front lines of receiving people's grief stories. And when I'm not doing grief work, and this is very transparent, so they know that I do this, but I'm a florist 4 days a week. And whenever sympathy calls come through, they are often routed to me because they're like, Shelby will know what to say to comfort grieving people who are trying to order flowers for someone who just died, or it's been 2 years and they finally get to host a memorial because everyone has finally come together in town. And not only to be able to ask the questions of what would you like and how much do you want to spend, but also what was their favorite color? Did they have a favorite sports team or a favorite flower or a favorite time of year that we contribute in flowers for you? And then, of course, this is hard. Of course, this is confusing and a lot of information. So let me break it down for you. We're here for you. We're trying to make this as simple as possible for you. And right now, this is a task on your list, and there are so many more, and we want to make this like a seamless process for you. It truly is so incredibly helpful. And something I was just telling someone earlier this week was that my boss at the flower shop has heard me speak to grieving people like this over the phone, and he started adapting this in his own family, where they are experiencing the losses of some aunts and uncles who have gotten older and have been diagnosed with terminal illnesses. And he was like, just being alongside you, as you are alongside people in their grief, has given me language that I didn't even know I needed to communicate with my parents, with my sibling, with other family members about this person that we have lost. And so if even one person in the hair salon, in the dog grooming, at the hotel counter reads this book and understands how to communicate with people who are deep in grief, then there's this ripple effect of the grief literacy, of the words to address grief spreading. And it really has such an incredible impact. I would love if 100 politicians would read this book. I think that would be world, I don't care from what country, I think that would be world changing.
I think you're exactly right. Exactly right. It's one of the critical issues in our civilization of humankind right now, that we're experiencing grief in a way, coming to the surface right now, but no one quite knows how to handle it and how to help each other carry it. And so I would love to see everyone have a copy of the book and
Yes.
give it as a gift to other people, have it on your own shelf. But it's really, really, truly is a valuable book to have.
Thank you. And the thing I'll say before we wrap up is that it is so short. It is such a short book. It is a skinny book. I think a lot of people are afraid, and rightly so, especially grievers, that books are going to be really long or really tedious or really time consuming and require a lot of brain power to read. And something I really wanted to do, because I knew grievers and grief professionals and simply people who are short on time in this day and age are going to be reading it, I was like, I want this to be as short as possible and as powerful as possible. That's why it's three stories, three phrases, and how to use them. And that's the book. So if you are hesitant to be like, I don't know if I can handle a whole book right now, I don't know if I can read a whole book, it's okay. You can buy the book, you can flip open to any random page, and I guarantee it'll be helpful for you. But something I've been creating lately is a series of YouTube videos that are much shorter. They're like 20 minutes long, that are called the Supporting Someone series. And every single one of them is based on something I write about in the book. So even if you don't have the capacity to read with your eyes, listen with your ears, watch with your eyeballs, or just carry it room to room with you on your phone if you're watching on YouTube or something like that. I'm trying to get this message out in as many ways as I possibly can, because I know books aren't necessarily how everyone can learn, especially after a loss. But if you can, and if you are interested in giving this book to other people or ordering a couple copies for your organization or something like that, it really does mean the world. And however you consume it, it will help.
And so the Supporting Someone miniseries is on your website. It's on YouTube, but
Yes.
also on your website. And you have blog posts, excellent blog posts. That's where I read about the second wave of grief that people can get to. And then I noticed you have a book club coming up associated with the book, a 6-week private book club for people who pre-order the book.
Yes, I sure do. So if you pre-order it before March 31st, which is when the book comes out, you can submit your order receipt number and you just literally type in from your indie bookstore or Amazon, whatever. It takes less than a minute to fill out. Here's my receipt number, here's my name and my email, and then the book club starts the second week of April. And so we will be reading all six sections of Course I'm Here Right Now together as a group and reading passages from the book and meeting once a week to talk about here's how you can use it and implement it right away in your own life. Even if you don't read the book in its entirety, which it's okay. A lot of people, especially who are grieving or who are busy, struggle to read a whole book. You will come away with here's the tips, here's the exercises, and you can bring your real life scenarios to the conversation and say, my cousin just lost her job. What should I say or what can I say to support her? How can you formulate a script to do that? Or my coworker who I'm not really close to, her nephew just died and she's devastated and hasn't been back to work yet. What's the first thing I should say to greet her when she returns to the office? Like I will be answering questions like that through the framework of Course I'm Here Right Now. And my favorite part of the book, which kind of just popped into my head now as I said it all together, is there's a tiny section at the end that will cover the last week of book club about the rare occasions when you can use all three phrases at once. And these are for the times when a grieving person feels as if no one in the world cares about their loss, that they're a burden, that they're a waste of your time to try to comfort. And this is a story grieving people genuinely tell. And they might say things like, no one cares about me, or I don't want to burden you with my problems, or you have so much else to worry about. And in that case, to text or to email or to say out loud to them, of course I'm here right now, all at once. There's nowhere else I need to be. You are the most important thing. I will continue to hold you in your loss in this moment and beyond. It is such a magical phrase all by itself as one united six-word sentence. Of course, I'm here right now, that you can offer to somebody who is grieving in your midst every now and then. But we'll get to talk about that at the last week in the book club. So yeah, if you pre-order it, do make sure you put your little receipt number in. You don't have to upload a photo or anything. It's not techie at all. You just type it in. You could make it up if you wanted to, honestly. And then put in your email address. But the book club is entirely free. And I'm very, very, very excited to meet everyone who has got a copy of this book and to see what they think and how it impacts their life. It's really going to be the first run of how is this changing people's communications and conversations when it comes to grief.
And then this book is the May selection of A Year of Reading Dangerously, which is the online reading group that I host. And so I should have planned this in advance. I didn't before we recorded this, but I think there's a possibility you and I might be able to do something together, a Q&A or something
Yes.
for that group of readers as well
That we sure will. I'm
in
signing
May.
up right now.
Okay.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
Yes, I would love that.
I'm excited to do more and to have more of these conversations, because even though we keep emphasizing how simple this is, it's these three phrases, it's easy to remember, it's still hard to do. And I think the more we ask our questions, the more we think through scenarios that we've been in and The more we try to be better support people for grief, the more questions will come up and the more we do need to keep talking about it so that we can continually educate ourselves.
Yes, that's a great point. And the more we practice, the better we get. But there's definitely situations I talk about in the book of like, if you're going to validate somebody's grief experience with, of course you feel that way, blah, 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 blah. I have like an asterisk of like, well, what if I don't agree with how they're reacting? Like, what if I don't understand why they're mad about their loss? Can I still say, of course, it makes sense that you're mad right now, or should I say something different? And so there's kind of these little instances where it's like, what if I don't necessarily agree with or understand their emotions? Or what if I can't physically be present in the case of I'm here? Or what if some part of their pain or their grief will be true forever in the case of right now? And so there's some deep dives in the book of like these what if questions or what if scenarios that will be really well served within the context of the book club, my book club, and then your book club conversation as well. Because it gets nitty grittier, as all things do, when they show up in real life.
Yeah, so very true. Well, I'll remind listeners the book, Of Course I'm Here Right Now. It will be available wherever people can pre-order it right now, right? At
Yes.
bookstores, on Amazon, wherever you get your books, you can pre-order, which is actually a great thing to do. It's really helpful for you as an author if people pre-order it. So I encourage people, get your order in so you'll be one of the first people to get the book. And then it will be after March 31st, it will be everywhere. I guess people will be able to find it on
Yes, it
bookshelves
will be
and
everywhere in the world. That's my hope anyway. And one of my biggest requests too is if you can't afford this book, please request it at your local library. That is something that's so helpful for grief professionals everywhere, because one of the places I first went to look for information about grief was the library. And so I have such a soft spot in my heart for any time a grief book is stocked on a shelf in a library, because someone guaranteed will be searching for it.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. And libraries do cover books that that get recommended to them when people say, you know, this is a really important book. They will get the book and have it on their shelves. So
Yes,
that's
they have
great.
money to spend on
Yes, they do.
requests and recommendations. Absolutely.
Yes, they do. Well, Shelby, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful conversation with you once again.
Karen, I am so grateful to have been on. Thank you so much. And I have continued to refer your podcast and your work to so many people that I love.
Oh, well, thank you. I just love being able to have people back again who've been on the podcast before. So I hope this won't be the last time. We'll do this again sometime.
Definitely not. And I will see you soon in May to talk about Of Course I'm Here Right Now.
All right. Thank you so much. And I'll remind listeners, ShelbyForsythia.com is the website. So check it out.
That's right.
Take care. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Shelby Forsythia about her brand new book, Of Course I'm Here Right Now, and that you'll get a hold of a copy of this book. It's really a great resource to have. I just loved how Shelby simplified this concept of thinking of what to say to someone who's grieving with these three terms, of course, I'm here, and right now. Because sometimes that's what we need in the moment of a crisis when we're having a hard time, we're stumbling over our words, we're not sure what to say, to have just that simple little mantra in our heads, of course, I'm here right now. That is so powerful, and that can be so helpful to all of us in those difficult moments when we want to say something, but we're not sure exactly what to say. And I think that's useful not just for people who are grieving over the loss of someone they love, but people who are grieving from anything, other types of losses as well, or even someone who's just experienced a surprising health diagnosis that they're trying to cope with. So I really appreciate Shelby's thoughtfulness in the book and how she constructed it and just gave us really the easiest possible takeaway. And it's right in the title of the book. So I encourage you to get it. I also want to point out that on Shelby's website, she has a book club. We mentioned this in the interview, but just go to the website in order to learn about her book club that you can sign up for just by purchasing the book. and that she also has a mini series on supporting someone through grief that's really helpful as well. And really just peruse her website, shelbyforsythia.com, and you'll find lots of helpful information there. And I'll remind you, if you enjoy this podcast and the content that I create, please share the news, tell other people about it who might benefit from listening as well, and you'll help me accomplish my goal of reaching more people with positive, helpful information about all areas of the end of life. And also make sure you subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen, because that's very helpful in this day of algorithms. This makes the podcast more visible to people who are searching for this kind of content, and they'll be able to find it more easily. And I'd really appreciate that if you would do that for me. One more reminder, I have a second podcast called What Really Matters, and there's a newer episode on there where we talk about consciousness and a metaphor for consciousness that is sometimes helpful to help us understand why someone we know may see the world entirely differently than we do. So that's one of the latest episodes on What Really Matters. And I have a Substack account where I write blog posts and essays from time to time. And I've been exploring elderhood, minimalism at the end of life, and a brand new post on rethinking the bucket list. So check all those out. There will be links in the show notes at eolupodcast.com. So thank you once again for listening with me and for staying here with me all the way through to the very end. I really appreciate you. I am so, so grateful for all the people who listen and send me feedback. It's really helpful to me. So we'll be back together again in a couple of weeks. I'll come back with another episode for you. And until then, remember, we're here for love. So love brings with us always, as its partner, hand in hand, grief. We have to face our fear, be ready for whatever life will bring us, and love and enjoy each and every moment of this life that you have a chance to live. Bye-bye.